Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, connecting to us on our webcast today. This is season number 2, episode 12B. We're actually doing 3 today, so we've put our insane heads in the guillotine today and decided to do 3 hours worth of understanding the future. My name is Sean Moffitt. I am here with my co-host, Andrea Cates. Say hello, Andrea.
Hi, nice to see everyone.
And we're about to introduce two really good panelists, and we're going to, I've actually characterized this as the most dynamic of our 3 webinars, Fig, because it straddles so much territory. We're going to talk customer experiences, engagement, technology, and platform. So as you can see, just by the very definition of it, we're casting a pretty wide net. And so this kind of marks our introduction to the 2020 Future Proofing Awards. You know, there's the Academy Awards, there's the Tonys, there's the, you know, Oscars. We thought, you know, we should probably celebrate those companies, organizations, brands that are actually doing great things about seeing the future and acting on it before many others do. And so we're going to talk about some of those companies today. There we are, Andrea, and as always, Joanne in the background managing some of our community management activities. And we're excited about this in particular for 2 or 3 different reasons. One, we kind of get to act like panelists too. So along with Jean-Marc and John today, we're going to actually chime in our own recommendations on who we think should be nominees for this process. And I thought to kick us off, I thought there was a great article in The Atlantic the other day about there's no going back to normal and how, you know, you know, obviously, we're all living through this pandemic. I think we're probably in the past the crisis response mode and more into the recovery and reimagination of the future type of mode. And so we thought it's kind of an interesting time setting to actually be talking about the future and kind of thinking about companies that are doing a really good job. And I think some of the pandemic flavoring may enter into some of our recommendations. I'm not too sure if you have thoughts on that, Andrea.
I think that I can't remember life now before the pandemic. That's how much effect it's had. So yeah, it's already changed. I hate the phrase the new normal and, you know, back to all of these things are such cliches, but I think it's now just normal. This is now for me just normal.
Yeah, accepting a new fate and maybe getting in front of it as well. So. And as mentioned to our panelists just before jumping on, we're using this video less for surfacing a live audience today and more surfacing, certainly if you're watching it right now, as an introductory video for our nominations process that starts in June. Over the course of the summer, we'll ask people from around the world to submit their favorites in terms of 16 different categories. And towards the end of the summer, my hope is Jean-Marc and John today will declare that they'll be happy to be our judges toward the end, as we've got like this fairly chock full list of nominees, and be able to award the people that we think are doing the best job in the world. So, and here are 16 categories. We just had a webcast this morning on brands, products, channels, and growth. We're having one right now on experience, engagement, technologies, and platforms. And we'll have one later on this afternoon on business models, ecosystems, talent, and transformation. And then there's the catch-all above. I don't know how we categorize or speak to them, but overall purpose, personal. And we've got one specific to 2020 who really comes out of this pandemic looking like a future proofer. Because we think, my hope is, knock on wood, 2020 that'll only be a category for 2020, right, Andrea? Like we will have no wave two. Great.
Yeah.
I thought we'd introduce our panelists. Maybe, Andrew, would you love to do the good deed of introducing them?
Let me start with Jean-Marc Frango, who is the colleague from many places. He's lived in Europe and lived in the US, and I know him from Silicon Valley overlaps, but his perspective is really understanding from, people say it from a customer perspective, of how corporate innovation really should work. He's led huge efforts in R&D and actually bringing things across the finish line for large companies all over. He can also talk a little bit more about his particular background. But what we really also love about this is that there'll be a global perspective from working with everything from startups to corporate to edge to large companies trying to move forward themselves. So we really value that perspective as well as the global view. And also John Monks, who lives in Cambridge, UK. And he's listed as a couple of things. One is ActionAid, which is an NGO that he works with, and that is based on helping women and girls defeat poverty. And he is also the head of a group called Curve, which is a really interesting and very ahead of the curve change and creative leadership company that we've had the opportunity to visit with. So great to have both of you here, and let's get on with it.
And high marks to John today for actually having a similar shirt to what he had in terms of the picture that he's already surfaced to us earlier. So the really good brand integration there, John. So Jean-Marc, close. It's close, but like you had a jacket on in the LinkedIn.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's the homey version of it today, like in the home office.
It is interesting how we've allowed our real lives to share forward in our kind of Zoom nation as it is. All right. Usually we have more preamble. This time we're getting straight into the discussions. We have these four different categories. We'll probably take them one at a time. We'll kind of go around the horn and speak to each of them. And so first out of the gate is experiences, whether that's user or customer or member experience, however you define it. We're looking for companies that have seen the future and are really world-class, world-beating in terms of creating great experiences for people. In no particular biasing order. John, why don't you start us off? What were there companies that you'd like to nominate off your list that you thought deserved praise?
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was such an interesting category, and I was reflecting when I was thinking about which companies to highlight today was, what will the criteria be? Like, how am I going to decide which ones are which? And I actually felt that to go into that process and not to be thinking about it right now, like you say, this year with the additional pandemic on your top row is kind of fairly special. So I've actually, and I say special, clearly this is not a great thing, but it's unique. So let's put it that way. So I think across all of these, I've been thinking, well, what is it that makes what they're doing right now kind of interesting in terms of the experience? And later we'll talk about those other categories. And in terms of experiences, I felt like, this world we're living in right now, and all of us, I think, are probably sitting in our own homes, and we've gone through months now of, I've heard this term, the Corolla coaster, this emotional up and down, where it will be from kind of fear about health, fear about kind of finance, fear about politics. In the US, you've had an additional dimension of the kind of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, and that's global too. So I guess I can give you that preamble because I feel like it's something that's been there against everything that I've looked at today. But the company I thought was really interesting is one called Rappi. So Rappi is a delivery company. You're nodding, you must have heard of it. It's, so I guess in one sense, it's no different to many others that sit in that space. It is, it's working in very many places, but particularly I'm interested in what they're doing in Medellin in Colombia. So there, what they've been doing is experimenting with use of bots. So, and I mean robots, like real robots. So there's a company called Kiwi that provides these robots. And what they're doing is to kind of take that last mile of the delivery. So taking their overall experience and taking that last mile of delivery and having it fulfilled, I guess is the word, by these robots. And the purpose of that is that you've got a seamless kind of touch-free experience. So it goes from the digital payment right at the front. This is only digital, there's no cash involved. And through the kind of collection from restaurants, which is typically what it's about, and then through into this gets delivered right to you without you needing to touch anything. And I feel like this is something which is a challenge for all organizations where they need to have physical contact with people. And that is still so many. If you kind of think even Amazon, the biggest digital fulfillment company, is still needing to experience a touch point with people. So how do you do that in a way that feels comfortable and where people feel safe? And I thought this was a really interesting experiment. And I'm sure this is only the first of many. So I'm keen to see where that will take us.
Interesting, the whole idea of touch points not having touch to them. There's a delicious irony in that, but certainly a good one. I'm lucky I didn't nominate one of mine who's doing stuff in China around delivering healthcare through drones and robots. So you've uniquely got that one, but great way to get us started off. Jean-Marc, what was your example and experiences here?
Yes, so so one thing that you didn't say in my intro is that I'm actually a hardcore telco guy. So I worked all my adult life and my corporate life for BT, British Telecom. So a lot of the companies I'm going to talk about today are a little bit have a flavor of telecommunications. The first one I'd like to mention is when I discovered it about 4 years ago, I had no anticipation of why it would be relevant today, but it turns out to be. It's a company called Enjoy, and some of you might know this company. It's a bit of a Silicon Valley darling, the reason being that the gentleman who started the company is Ron Johnson. Ron is the inventor of the Apple Store concept, and he pioneered this, as we know, super successfully when he was at Apple. He went on to work for JCPenney's for a little bit of time, and then finally found his way into his new venture, which is called Enjoy. So what he is talking about with Enjoy, what he's implemented with a number of companies already worldwide, including people like AT&T, and of course the company I worked for at the time, which is BT, which is EE in the UK. And John, I mean, now that I know that you're UK based, you'll probably resonate with this. So what he does is he brings the idea of telecommunications retail, or actually digital device retail, to the end user through their doorsteps. So it's the concept of the mobile store. The typical experience is you buy a new smartphone online, right? Especially now, it's kind of the 5G era. People are going to change their smartphones. They're going to want a new one. They're going to go on the website probably, or they'll have done their research online. And it comes to clicking the I buy this. And instead of asking Amazon to do a blind delivery of your smartphone, or instead of going into the store today, which is not without consequences, or at least without risks, what Enjoy does is it delivers the smartphone to your door with an expert. So they have a sort of Uber model for people that have a sort of cult following for Ron. I mean, if you think of the Genius Bar type people, those are the sort of people that he's recruited to come and deliver that new smartphone to you. Now, in today's world, I mean, yesterday, or in the pre-normal, in the pre-new normal, they would knock on your door and they would come in and you would sit down with them and they would do the unwrapping for you. And they would say, okay, well, you have a nice house and you have a Wi-Fi network, and let me connect your new phone to the Wi-Fi network, and let me download all these new software versions that you have to do this for at least 20 minutes before you can start using any new device today, right? So they would do all that for you, and they would hand it over to you, and they will show you the new version of whatever is interesting about that phone and how to use it, and make you a little bit more of an advanced user. So it's a very nice way, a nice high touch experience type of new model, if you like. Now, what they do today, and they just launched in fact not that long ago with Rogers in Canada, and what they do there is they actually still deliver to your home, so it does save you the trip to the store, but they stay 6 feet apart on your front porch, and they do the low touch engagement with you, in that they help you discover what's new on the phone, but they do that a bit remotely, so there's no physical touching that takes place. So it's an interesting new model of the new way people might discover new digital devices, because what is true about these things is that we all think they're super simple, we all think we're very good with them. You were talking about drones a minute ago. You go and buy a drone, and how long does it take you before you become really good at it? So that's what this new model does. I mean, it gives you the first induction into the new technology. It helps you, it accompanies a bit of a hand-holding, if you like, into getting into this new world of, not necessarily just smartphones, but actually significant digital new smart tools that we will no doubt will get more of, because you're probably very well aware that during the pandemic, there was a bit of a burst or an explosion of online digital, not just sales of anything, but sales of digital items. They've become very popular. So that's my nomination. Enjoy for the experience category.
Wonderful. No, I think it's such a portable concept too, right? Like it could be digital products, but I mean, I could conceive of a world if you're not going into retail, it's fashion, it's, you know, whatever things that you may spend a lot of time with. So so we've identified things that are touch points from 600 feet away, from 6 feet away. Are you going more intimate here, Andrea? Where's your touch point experience you're going to nominate?
I just could not help but say the only problem with the Enjoy model is every single person that's helped me with technology is about 9 years old, and they don't have driver's licenses. So it's a problem. That's a problem in the model, but we could probably work on that.
That is true. And you know that Enjoy actually has quite a bit of an impact on reducing fraud for telecommunication. There's a huge amount of fraud when people get their items delivered. But we can talk more about that.
There's a lot to that model. I mean, it really has legs. Well, my experience one is really interesting because I just like John said, to just even think about what does this mean anymore? What does experience mean? I mean, I used to think experience was, you know, in person, and that's gone. Now, are we having an experience now? An experience? Is gaming an experience? Is virtual, you know? So I had to really go to first principles. And what I decided to do is something a little bit self-serving, because at Future Proofing Next, you know, we love to say that we can help people see early signs of big things happening. So we don't predict what's happening, we just observe things. And there's a company that did that really well. I'll tell the story of Moen, because you would never think that in a category where you'd win an award, you would go for a company that makes faucets for a living. But they've done a couple things that have been pretty head turning in a, you know, kind of sleepy field. Number one is that Lowe's and the home stores like that have been open. They were considered vital services. And so they never had to go out of business. So there's kind of an advantage in terms of being able to stay in touch with the public. But they didn't use that in a way that was negative. I mean, the way that I think was really interesting is, and everybody's afraid because, you know, we give our data to these evil companies and they're going to do horrible things with it. Well, here's a company that saw the data and thought about it differently in terms of experience, right? They realized that the experience that we used to have of someone installing, you know, fixing a faucet, installing something for us, had completely shifted, partly because that person's not permitted in our house right now. So the do-it-yourself movement, which had probably always been there latently, you know, as a kind of pent-up demand, or the person that when I get 15 extra minutes, I'll watch that YouTube video on how to fix my own faucet. Oh, the heck with it, I'll call a plumber. So they started uncovering this latent and untapped market that was coming to the forefront, which is do-it-yourself. And so we were in a conversation the other day with someone from the company, and they're actually starting to look at capitalizing on this as something more long-term. It's not just a flash in the pan. So the thought of starting at a kind of, I would call it a boring, you know, making faucets, pretty much a commodity, you know, there's some designer faucets, but then realizing that, you know, imagining that you have a faucet and then it's like, wait a minute, do it yourself. Well, suddenly that's tapping into a human experience, right? I haven't fixed a faucet since I lived in college, right? When you kind of had to. And so there's a whole, just like cooking became a thing. There's a whole do it yourself pent up demand that I think they're tapping into. I think they're really onto something. And it looks as if they might be developing kits of parts where you can imagine it turning, I don't know that they're doing this yet, but it turning into a YouTube channel. And then, oh, by the way, they can keep inventory of all the things that you've bought. And then, oh, wait, that just broke. Oh, wait, it's time to fix this other one. Well, here's something that matches. So you could picture like Houzz, you know, kind of a home company plus a Wayfair, you know, building on a whole ecosystem just based on this new awareness that Andrea's not going to fix my own faucet, and maybe I'll do a do-it-yourself project. And that sense of human creativity and, you know, self-sufficiency that was latent is now coming to the forefront. So I vote for Moen.
There you go. Let's add it to the roster. I tend to on these ones go on three quickies, I guess. There's usually something that's large and sometimes evil that people boo me on when I nominate, and then there's something obscure, and then there's something in between. So with similar type of bent here, I'll nominate Uber for the customer experience. You can all boo me now because I know they're the evil bad guy that had questionable morals at the start of their lives in Silicon Valley there. But if you dial back 5 years ago and look at the world and say, wow, you're telling me that I can order from a restaurant and in 30 minutes without me going anywhere, it'll arrive still hot on my front door premises, or I can get across the city after I've had one too many drinks at the pub and actually see where the car is on my app, we would be thoroughly impressed. And so I'll give Uber credit in terms of doing that. And I think that the morals thing, I think, is getting a little bit better inside their company. So it makes me feel better about nominating them. From a pandemic one, I'm just going to nominate Ann Pizzas. They're an East Coast set of eateries, pizzerias, I guess. And they pretty much came out with a blanket statement from a customer experience standpoint that all of their employees and anybody that could identify as a hospital worker were getting access to free and unlimited pizzas, which, you know, it's kind of a nice perk, I guess, at the end of the day. But, you know, there was no, you know, asterisks or question marks or whatever. It was just like unmitigated, this is what we're going to do, which I think in this time and age, we're seeing companies either show their best character at times. So that was another one. And my featured one is Beamery Talent, which, John, you might know from, I think they're a UK-based company, actually. And they are a soup to nuts. If you are hiring, managing your talent, it's a, you know, principally a SaaS company that actually creates that level of connection. And certainly I just jumped on their website today, and in a pandemic where you can't actually see those physical candidates coming in, there's a ton of different complexity around hiring people. And so they've done a great job there. They've built a community called Spark. So if you're a hiring person, they've actually built a community around their business, which is always great from an experience standpoint. And they've created a number of different partnerships that, even though they don't themselves create it, they have an integrated system because they've created these different partnerships. So those are my experience candidates. We'll add those to the mix as well. And we're going to move on to engagement. So companies that, you know, engage their customers better than others tend to do well in the marketplace. I'm curious to know what our panelists have advocated here. Maybe we'll start with Jean-Marc this time. What was your engagement nominee?
I had two engagement nominees, and one of them is really more about employee engagement than customer engagement. And you might have seen this, but everyone's looking at how they go back to work, right? You know, from working from home or working from anywhere to this new hybrid mode of some people working from home, some people working from the office. I mean, my little personal anecdote about this is when I was working for BT based here in the Valley, it was every day was working from home for me, right? And I can tell you that it works perfectly when everyone's working from home. It's a lot more difficult when you have a hybrid set where you have 20 people in a meeting room and you far away on the end of a Zoom line. And that's the world we're going to step into, which is the world of not everyone's working from home anymore. We now have a bit of a mix, and you have to edge, you know, elbow yourself into a meeting where you have four people in the room and you're at the other end of it. So for in that respect, I mean, the guys that have impressed me recently is Coinbase, you know, those guys. So they've declared that their new model for getting back to the office is what they call remote first. And remote first is not just about anybody who wants to work remote can do that. And it's about redesigning how the company operates from the ground up in order for these models to work in a fair and balanced way. And that means, for instance, things like documenting a lot more everything that was previously kind of relying on synchronous comments of, you know, this is how this works. Everything needs to be documented a lot more. Basically, all their processes they're looking at the moment, and they're redesigning their processes to be operational in a fair way. If you have half of your team or a portion of your team working from home, another portion of your team working from the office, so that's a cool model that I like about employee engagement and trying to make this new balanced life fair for everyone. And not just fair, but so that everybody feels engaged and there's no disengagement from the people that stay at home, or vice versa, from the minority, perhaps, that will be working from the office. That's my first nominee. The other one's a bit more of a fun remote working company again. And you might know about this, but it's a company called Sococo. And Sococo is redesigning floor plans that you used to have in the old world. Say you had your office on a floor plan and you had, you know, 3 meeting room and 10 individual offices. And you can imagine the blueprint of that floor plan from above, right, in 2 dimensions. Well, they're porting this to the web and they're saying your online experience as a worker now is going to be you wander around with your little icon of your face in this floor plan. And if I get into Sean's office and Sean happens to be there and I can see Sean's there because, you know, the presence indicator of Sean is there, so I can see you're in your office, only your little icon of your face, I get there and it creates an automatic Zoom. It's like, you know, I open the door of your office and I put my head there.
I love it.
And then if we have something like this, it means that we've probably assembled everywhere into a large meeting room. And when you get into that meeting room, all of a sudden you get into that sort of meeting. So that's my second. So Coco is my second nominee. And there's a lot of people experimenting with those models at the moment. I mean, whether it's 2D, Remo is getting a lot of traction on the 2D side of things with tables as opposed to meeting rooms. But there's also 3D guys that are doing really well with this. I mean, there's reinventions of Second Life all around at the moment. I don't know if you follow that, but companies like Virbella and Tio and others. So, I mean, those would be my 2 nominees for this particular category of engagement.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. Second Life did come to mind when you're telling me about that. And I'm like, wow, somebody has to figure out how employee engagement works in a real life setting. Because I think open office, at least from my standpoint, has been maybe an unmitigated failure. It's like we just got people in open offices that are texting each other, right? Like it's just doesn't work. I could be wrong on that. So great examples. John, what were your examples and experience?
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting, Jean-Marc, and I really love, you know, I've experimented with Remo, and as a lifelong facilitator, workshops has been, you know, the tool of my trade for decades, and to suddenly get it injected into digital only space is fascinating. So I've loved Remo. You know, you can do great things with Zoom. There's a lot of great stuff. One of the things I found very interesting about it, though, is just how basic actually a lot of that, you talk about the 3D, you know, the VR stuff that comes out, even with obviously a lot of investment from Microsoft and the likes, doesn't compare to what exists within gaming. So I think that this no doubt will have dev teams around the world redirecting a lot of money towards that. So I'm personally really excited to see what comes out there. I don't have an example because actually I don't think there is one yet, but I'm really excited. Maybe by the time of the awards there'll be one there. I really hope so. And I really pick up on that point about the you know, the remote working partially. So I coach a load of CEOs and founders, and that is the number one thing that people are talking about is how are we going to work when part of the team is in the office and part of the team is not. So Andrea actually has kindly volunteered into my research into exactly where that's going, so maybe we'll be able to share some findings later. But to my nominees, so I've got a couple here. One is kind of in the, you know, is this surprising? Maybe not, but maybe is for Unilever. So again, it's very much in the COVID space. I mean, obviously Unilever sits primarily or largely in a kind of personal care and hygiene space. A lot of their products are there. They've spent a lot of time in terms of the comms and the behavior change that goes around that. And in the last probably 6 to 8 weeks, they've launched something which is a partnership with the UK government called a Hygiene Hub. And the idea behind this is that they're going to kind of marshal a whole load of separate projects. So they put, I think they put £50 million behind it. The UK government has put 50, so there's 100 million behind it. So it's really powering some initiatives here. The idea is to use kind of digital solutions, behavior change, knowledge, and to roll it out into kind of poorer parts of the world. So this is directed at Southeast Asia, Africa, and Southern America. And there are some really, really interesting projects that are being spawned there. And what it's doing is engaging both directly engaging the consumers in that part of the world, being kind of generous in the, you know, giving the money out, not expecting necessarily that people will use their products to wash their hands with, for example. So I think that's very interesting. And then at the other side, that it's really sharing knowledge, sharing the data and the information that's going to be used in the partner ecosystem. So I think there's a multi-levels of engagement there, which I think are fascinating. Obviously, that's an enormous global corporation. But at the other end of the spectrum, there's an amazing company, which I really love, called Imagination Africa. And there's a woman, she's called Karima Grant. She's absolutely inspirational. And her mantra is that it is creativity and play that will solve the developmental challenges that are faced. So kind of getting away from a technocratic and bureaucratic approach to development and thinking more about how those communities can solve their own challenges. So the way that it works is effectively creating resources. They could be exhibitions in museums, they could be play centers, they could be an ecosystem of different people running businesses that enable people throughout Africa to, and it's very much a kind of youth focus or child focus, build creative muscle, I guess. And I'm passionate about the ability for people to solve their own problems. I really think that everybody has it in them. And so something that is enabling large numbers of people in communities that often have been treated as kind of recipients of overseas aid, who aren't able to think for themselves and certainly not solve their own problems, I think is really interesting.
It's interesting. If I look at our 2019 nominee in this engagement category, we had Dollar Shave Club on there, which was like the funny kind of like frivolous, we'll send you shaving products. It seems like, you know, whether it's from a utility standpoint in Jean-Marc's case or from a real important, you know, societal issues, it seems like our engagement has maybe got a little bit more serious and maybe more important in 2020. Andrea, your engagement nominees.
Well, once again, one of the things that's super interesting about this group is we've all taken our own vector in terms of defining what matters in engagement. So I thought about engagement from the perspective of one of the forces that we see coming up as essential as well. So the same way that I talked about, you know, the internal need to you know, be a do-it-yourselfer, et cetera, to me, that there's a sense of affiliation, and esports has it in spades. And one of the things that I really love is a company, as most of you know, we do a lot of work in the fintech space, and that's a world that's changing quite a bit, the future of finance and banking, et cetera. But it turns out that you can't force people to, you know, to go stay with their bank, and, you know, all of the friction around changing goes away when you have an alternative pretty quickly or when regulation loosens up. So there's a company in Denmark called Lunar, and I hadn't heard of them before. I heard of them recently through a board that I sit on. And there's an esports company called Astralis, Astralis. And so imagining that this Nordic-based esports company that has a natural tribe of people who are completely, you'll never convince them not to be a gamer. That's just not going to happen. That is part of their identity. And so these are people who typically are outside of the traditional finance world. You know, they are the unbanked for lots of reasons. Sometimes I won't go into it, but, you know, they spend a lot of their time behind the screen. So what they did is they developed something that was highly respectful and in terms of engagement. So esports people are highly engaged with the world that I don't, you know, participate in. And what they developed at Lunar is a branded payment card and digital content that is not cheesy. It's not some big bank trying to attract the unbanked, you know, so the attitude in terms of engagement is natural and organic. And they also, every single thing about the way that they approached the problem was to tap into, in a very respectful way, to the way that this community / tribe of people like to engage. So they're not trying to make them cross the Rubicon and do traditional engagement. And I think we have a lot to learn from this. First of all, there is a tribal nature to, you know, a lot of loyalty within this niche group growing all the time. It cracks me up that people use Twitch and watch other people play games. There's a whole world of esports that I think is different. And I think that also it's gained a lot of traction. And so the two things, one is the relationship between Astralis and esports and Lunar, the fintech company, figuring out that you need the win-win, you know, between these two talents to really come up with something, as well as the tremendous respect, in my read of it at least, for this tribe that you cannot penetrate. You can't tell them, please go to the bank, you're unbanked. That's not really respectful. And so figuring out a way to create content that's natural, doesn't feel like a bunch of pop-up ads, as well as a branded payment system that they can relate to. They're not waiting to grow up and be an Amex person. And I think that's a really big aha. And I think that, you know, to John's point about letting people be themselves and serve them where they are is my new definition of engagement.
Oh, it's great. I'll probably add a fourth level of engagement here as well, but it is interesting your point about, you know, how engagement can be a business model, right? Like you've almost created a different business based on how you engage. I'll go quickly on this because I know we need to get through all four of our categories. Ring Central for me was an interesting one, just in a work from anywhere experience. I mean, they've had a perfect storm hit them, like in a good way. People are now working from home. You go to their website, it's a complete kind of support resources for working from home. So I thought, or work from anywhere, I guess. So that was one. I've been a bit of a pandemic geek. We'll mention something about the Grace One Guild that we've built, but I love Nate Silver's 538, I guess you'd call it a media site or blog. Like, he was the data hound behind Obama's campaign, I guess, in the first place. And he's got these different graphs on there that charts how people are thinking about the pandemic. So it keeps me coming back every couple of days to actually see what's changed. So unlike this point in time type of stuff, his blog or news site engages me from what has actually changed in terms of people's mindsets about the pandemic. And the last thing, it's kind of a frilly one, and certainly I'm not the customer here, but it was identified in some of our research. It's called Smash Tests, and I hope I got it correctly. Rompers are apparently back again. So you remember those 80s style rompers that you wear? Well, I guess people are wearing them in homes now in this pandemic. Comfort is at a maximum. And there's this company called Smash Tests that makes rompers, and it looks, there's only so beautiful rompers can look like, but they get you in this mindset of just being part of the romper nation, I guess, if you will. So Smash Tests is my kind of one to the side over here. All right. Enough fun. Let's go into technology. This is hardcore. I know you guys, it's part of your core experience. You could go anywhere with this one. I don't know which ones you'll come up with. John, who do you have in your technology nominee here?
Yeah, this one, there's so much because we're immersed in it the whole time for work and for leisure. The one that really jumps out for me is a company called Mural. So it's absolutely in the space of how do you collaborate as teams? How do you come up with ideas? They describe themselves as empowering imagination workers. And I just love that as an idea. There's this idea that you'll have heard of a lot, that 20% of your time develops 80% of your output. And there's a notion now that in this time of crisis, it's actually only 14% of your time that's delivering you 86% of the value. So there's these moments of time where all of a sudden something amazing happens, where some invention or imagination happens. Typically they have been in the office. So Jean-Marc, you've had a different experience of this, but it's been in the moments of interaction with other people that great things happen. Every invention, I'm willing to bet, is the product of more than one human mind. So some technology that allows people to collaborate in a way that actually they can reproduce that, but without it being in the physical offices, is great. So Mural, I love, is an Argentinian company. The UI is great. The usability is lovely, but it really allows people to tap into that experience of co-creation, and also to think visually rather than verbally, when actually the visuals tend to be this, the faces on screen, and then everything reverts to black and white text. So I really love Mural as my nomination for tech
That's great. It's tech's great when you don't notice it as much too, right? It sounds like I haven't used the product before, but it sounds like yes, technology is enabling things, but it's not interfering with your life, I guess, right? So, Jean-Marc, technology nominees. You're going to go telco again?
Where are we going? I'm going to go close, but I just want to put a little vote of support in favor of Mural. Just before this started, I was arranging my Friday workshop Mural workplace. And I think that behind you, John, you have a early prototype of Mural, I think. And Sean, what in the world is a romper? I've been looking that up. I don't think we do that in France. We don't manufacture it in any way, I don't think. So
you're probably too well dressed in France for rompers, I think. Smash test, though, I believe it's called. So
anyway, so about technology, I'm going to go close to the telco space. We have been flirting and skirting around the subject of esports and gaming. And I'm going to dive into the world of art and music for a minute. I'm sure that you have seen what's happened on Fortnite with Travis Scott and a number of the events that are now being organized there and the number of viewers that are there. Either they're there for gaming, but they, you know, sometimes they're not even there for gaming. They're just there for the event, for the music event. So I'm really intrigued with what happens in the post-pandemic world with not just the big guys, but actually the small bands, the people that used to have a Friday night gig at the pub, or, you know, to take a UK terminology example. And I've just recently discovered this UK-based company that no one knows about, by the way, and their name is NYXVX. And frankly, don't ask me why that's what they're called. But what they're doing is really cool. So they've revisited the subject of 3D worlds again, but this time applied to a more of a gaming / music environment. So you come into you're invited to a party, a gig, or an event, normally by your band. And you turn up and there's a street there, and that street has multiple venues. It could be a jazz bar, it could be a disco, it could be a, you know, concert hall, or it could be a, you know, a forest where you have a meadow in the forest and everybody plays there. So, and of course you turn up as an avatar, and you have to, you know, when you turn up as an avatar, you in an event like that, you can go all out playing the part, right? And then have been completely crazy about your avatar outfit. And then you can decide what dance moves you want to practice for that particular event. If it's a tech event or techno event of music. Anyway, so that's the technology that they've built, which is at the you know, somewhere between virtual world, gaming, and music. Because the other side of it that's really interesting is that the musicians themselves don't have to be all in the same room. They can actually work from home, they can play from home, and they have a sort of real-time mix in the middle that allows you to do that, which from a technology perspective, super interesting. It's a hard problem to crack, that one. If you've seen those musical events in the past that were streamed or broadcasted during COVID times, including the big concert, they were pre-mixed. They were pre-recorded and pre-mixed, and it was just streamed. When it was perfect, you streamed the whole thing. But these guys do it real time. So that makes it even more interesting from a technology perspective. And 5G plays a big role here, because 5G has this very short latency, meaning there's no round trip delay. Because if one of the musicians in one place, the other one in the other place, you start mixing them and they're not exactly on the same tempo, you can hear it right away. So it's a very demanding technology application. And then, of course, the guys, you know, the guy around them that organized the light show and everything else, well, they've got a software console, and they can organize the light shows exactly as they would in real life. It's a very cool concept, a very cool company, NYXVX. That's my nominee.
I'm almost nominating that as my, like, discovery of the day. Like, I have to go there now just to see if it's real or not, right? Like, and it's funny, you're also building platforms of life here. You've had SoCoCo, which was like your workplace thing. This is like a play thing. You're going to tell me maybe on the next category, your life thing maybe here. So
these guys are very early stage. But yeah, if you're interested, I'll get you invited to some of the future events.
I know about 20 others that would love it if it fulfills the feeling of being there, right? So, Andrea, your nominee in technology.
Mine's quick. It's otter.ai. I had been looking for it for years. It is a transcription service plus plus. It is something that about 2 months ago decided that they were going to integrate into Zoom. So it's like you don't have to take notes anymore. There's something wonderful about having real-time transcription. But there's more. first of all, transcription has been imperfect, and Google Translate's gotten pretty good at translating languages lately. You know, there was a big ML moment where suddenly it got really good, right? And the algorithms were clunky, and you would get all these funny, you know, things. But with otter.ai, it's interesting because you can just see that this is just the tip of an iceberg. You know, this is a whole technology of I don't need to take notes. You know, there's a surveillance / cybersecurity concern, of course, because private conversations can now be, you know, it's one thing if you hang up the phone and no one heard that, or, you know, wiretapping perhaps. But now there's transcripts, which, you know, there's that weird worry. However, so you have this Zoom call, you don't have to take notes at all. So it right now, it literally is just simultaneous transcription. There also are, you know, all of the technologies that have been sitting on the sidelines waiting to plug and play into something. The fact that they figured out, a lot of people can do transcription, right? There's Temi, lots of services. But they're like, oh, wake up call, Zoom's about to be a thing. Let's go make a connection with them so that it's seamless. Then you can just imagine note taking, highlighting. When Andrea speaks, we need just her part that to be extracted. John is off the record, so we're gonna, you know, there's so many ways you can deal with it now that it's a form factor we can deal with, as well as all the analytics on the other side. So you can imagine coaching. Andrea says too much. You can imagine content. Boy, she didn't seem to really come across with enough leadership prowess, or she was too strong. And you know, being able to do sentiment analysis on and on and on, and it all begins with a simple plug of otter.ai into Zoom. Cool, could be creepy. Right now, I think it's cool.
No, I think it's great, Andrea, because we've all seen the transcription stuff before where you have to work twice as hard just to make sense of the transcription versus having just hired somebody in the first place, right? So,
yeah, by the way, the last thing on that is foreign languages, right? You can just imagine I'm speaking in English, but why can't the people speaking in Japanese just hear me at the same time? It's just a matter of months, I would think, before we become a very seamless global society.
My quickies on this one, just I'll say it, it's Zoom. As much as WebEx and Microsoft Teams were around, I always find it interesting when the single-minded, single-focus kind of variant becomes kind of the leader in a space. And, you know, in my experience on all three of those platforms, short of security, which obviously has been a bit of a handicap for them, they've produced probably a better experience and have been kind of one slightly step ahead of the competition, who maybe looked at video conferencing as a hobby versus something that became essential right away. Company out of Canada called Blue Dot, 3 days into this pandemic, nobody in the world knew what was going on. They used AI to send things out to hospital databases. Things were returning back from Wuhan, China, going, oh my God, something's flared up here. So they can lay claim to kind of the first discoverers, I guess, of the pandemic and kind of the, a real use of AI to actually try to kind of figure out for the world before they actually knew what was going on. And two other quickies, DocuSign. I'm not too sure what great stuff they're doing, but certainly searches for DocuSign have gone up fourfold over the last 2 or 3 months. So the idea that we will never need to have a signature again is an interesting one. And certainly DocuSign would be prudent to actually use that to take it in different directions. And startup called ZapBG. Andrew will like this one. You don't need to have Adobe software anymore to screen out your backgrounds, nor do you have to go to that weird thing in PowerPoint that says, I want that thing screened out or whatever. Their single-minded purpose is to, you know, if you want a picture of Jean-Marc today without his cream background, I can go to ZapBG and in a span of a few seconds, I can just get your head and map it over here. So it's taking what used to be the domain of a designer and could you spend an hour on this? To be kind of something that you can do right away. All right, last category, platforms. We've all seen the rise of platforms in the last decade. I guess we're curious to know whether it's some of the the normal people on the list or some new platforms that we might have surfaced here. And I think it's Jean-Marc's turn to go first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we did talk a bit about drones, right? I mean, you were about to talk about how drones played a big role in delivery of medical supplies in Wuhan. I think we all know about this. So the assumption here is that drone delivery or drones for different types of missions is becoming mainstream. And I've nominated a company that's not very well known. It's actually a French company. It's a startup. And they are right in the middle of creating this platform infrastructure for multi-vendor drones. And it takes the form of a container, like a shipping container. What they have kitted the container with is a massive docking recharge garage station for drones. So if you are operating a fleet of drones for different types of missions in a particular geography, could it be a city or rural or whatever, these containers smartly dispersed in the city can host X number of drones. I think it's 8 at the moment. And of course, there's a recharge function. So you recharge the batteries or you swap out the batteries. There is a auto payload swap function. So you swap the payload up and down from the drones. And there is a download function for whatever imaging the drone has been collecting on its mission. If it's a mission about imagery, I mean, it doesn't have to be. So it's multifunctional and it doesn't stop there because I was already impressed with that, but it doesn't stop there. They've also imagined that such stations could be very useful 5G edge centers. For those of you who know a little bit about what's going on with 5G, the low latency that I talked about previously in 5G is only really workable if you have edge compute functionality very close to basically the base station. Because if you have just 3 milliseconds going to the base station and then you have to go 400 milliseconds away to go to Amazon, then that advantage is lost, right? So they're doubling up this functionality of these containers by setting them up as potentially, of course, as edge, mobile edge compute stations. So I thought that was very smart because, of course, you need that as well. You need that low latency to drive the drones on their missions. It's typical of a low latency application that is required for the drone. So I thought that was a very interesting platform play, which allows multiple operators of drones on different types of missions and multiple vendor types, you know, of drone equipment to interwork on this new platform that they're looking to deploy. And they have a lot of traction in Asia at the moment, as you can imagine.
What's the name of the company again, Jean-Marc?
I missed it off. EVA, and it's EVA.xyz. Again, don't ask me why, I'm a specialist of the, strange names for startups, but EVA is the name of the company.
Wow, that's an awesome discovery as well. John?
So I think, it's fascinating what we've been talking about all the way through today. And I think this, that what happens in 2021 when we get out of this pandemic year, I think is going to be really interesting. I think it will be shattering a huge number of businesses. I think one of the things we're finding is that as people realize they can do things they didn't think they could do, it puts organizations that are much more agile and much more nimble in a much more advantageous position. And so, especially in industries where they may have high fixed overheads or they may be very slow, they're gonna be really at a disadvantage. So this is a space you know very well. I'm picking a company in InsurTech. So insurance is one of those sectors. It is slow moving, it's highly bureaucratic, it's regulated. The organizations will typically have large offices, they will have high numbers of people employed, and so they are going to have a challenge should a new entrants come into the space. So Sean, you talked about Uber. The company I'm nominating is called Insure, I-N-S-H-U-R. It's a insure tech company. It's New York and UK based. And they provide insurance to rideshare drivers. So you think about this, it's kind of the Uber driver's insurance. So it's finding something that could have taken many days, certainly many hours, and making it a few seconds and a few clicks, kind of in investigating the idea of kind of hybrid insurance between when you're driving for personal versus when you're driving for work. If maybe you're driving for Lyft, but also Uber Eats and also Deliveroo, like how do you manage an insurance platform that supports all of that? So that I think is it's clever tech, and I think it's going to have a competitive advantage because of the situation we're in. But I also was really impressed in the last four or five months that we've been in lockdown. One of the things that's happened to those rideshare drivers, who, as you know, typically are the most precariously employed, they don't have contracts. And at least in New York City, the Uber traffic dropped overnight 90%. So this was like catastrophic change. So you imagine what is Swiss Re doing about this? What is your typical big insurer? That's not a feature for them. But something about this ability to focus on a niche has meant that insurers have been able to focus on how do they support those drivers. So they've been thinking about, okay, what are the how-tos? How do you support an Uber driver that's having to drive even when they may worry about their own health or worry about creating a safe environment for their passengers? And then in addition, thinking about what does it mean for their mental health? How do they support them through this time? So it's taken something which is both a tech platform, but also engaging their users in a really kind of sensitive way, to use your phrase, Andrea, because it's allowing a kind of engagement that you just typically would never get from your insurance company.
Excellent example. I love just the splintering of insurance in terms of different applications that kind of fall through the cracks. This seems like one of them. Andrea.
Yeah, I'll say one very quick thing about John's, which is interesting that it's like the product is going to the natural environment versus in the old days, give a slogan, get people to come out of their natural environment, be distracted, go buy a thing and go back to their natural environment habitat. And this is a metaphor because it's like sheltering in place. The tide has changed. Mine is really quick. It's called Mentimeter. It's a Swedish little startup. I don't know if you know it.
Yes.
It's founded by Johnny Warstrom. And the reason I like it is that it's a little bit primitive in its interface, but what you can do is take polls during a meeting. You know, you're in the middle of a Zoom meeting and then you suddenly have to stop everything and poll people. And it's very old fashioned. And it's in a way, it's very low tech. It's the opposite of avatars. It's literally like a pie chart appears. What does everyone think at this meeting? 20% think this. I mean, it's so old fashioned and yet it's kind of delightful in that sense. I wanted to pick something from Sweden just because they had a challenging approach to COVID. And I think we wanted to give them some good points here. It was a little bit obscure from a part of the world I wasn't sure anybody else would do. And I think that in its kind of primitive nature today, and it's not like fancy graphics or anything. I mean, you could have a simple Excel pie chart is what it kind of looks like. And in the old days we had those polling things where you would vote, press one if you're a Democrat, two if you're a Republican, and it would show you. It has all of the richness of possibility of, you know, the gaming and the ability to take a poll during a meeting. And ultimately, we have really kind of silly ways right now of making interactive Zoom, right? Like we can do a breakout, we can do a poll, but basically we're missing the whole point of this kind of virtual moment. Why are we sitting, right? Like we could be doing anything and interacting in so many ways. So I think, you know, it's starting off small and kind of modest and kind of cool, edgy, low tech, but I would think that in a year it's going to find some legs and become something different. And I wouldn't put it past them because they have charismatic personality in the leader.
We're going to try to wrap up all of this in the next 2 minutes. When you're having good conversation, time travels fast, right? We're already into the hour. So my quickie is called Focus Mate. Essentially, it's the work from home kind of like, why is it I'm not being very productive? You can actually team up with another person, declare your goal of doing work, and then work together with a complete stranger. And I guess their insight is, much like fitness, when you declare to somebody else that you're going to do something, there's a 93% chance that you're going to do it based on that public declaration. So they've created a platform around that. All right. quick around the table, 15 seconds each. What have we learned today? And Andrew, you know we've done this before, and I'll pivot to you right away, and then we'll go Jean-Marc, and then John, just quickies in terms of what did we learn from each other?
I learned about parts of the world I didn't know about. I think the Africa project was one I'm about to go look deeply into. So I love having the world open up to me.
Excellent. Jean-Marc.
Yeah, I've learned that the whole subject of how we work in the new world is becoming, I was going to say, a subject of itself. I mean, it's becoming a clear area of focus for technology companies to create things, large companies to reinvent how they work, and people like us to think about how that actually changes the status quo. So I think we've been very, very interesting. We've been, the number of companies we nominated that are in that space is significant. I was not expecting Mentimeter, for instance, just that Andrea, that's one of the companies that I also like. But you see, I mean, it just shows you how much momentum in that space there is.
And John.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. I've learned a lot. There's a lot written down on my post-it that I'm going to go and look up after this. I think the big thing that comes through for me is just the shift of so much that is going to happen. I have this image in my mind of all these factories that have been making widgets for decades that all of a sudden realized they could make ventilators and masks. And now they're going to be able to go back and go, well, so we could do anything almost. And that parallel exists across every industry, I think. This idea that now, like, the possible has expanded. So I think that for me is an uber theme across all of this. Like, what are we going to see next year?
I agree. And I guess maybe just to compliment both our panelists and Andrew, my co-host here, it's like, it's amazing technology and experiences, they can be somewhat commoditized, but it's amazing what happens when you got a group of smart people that can tease out what the application and the interesting thing behind that nugget is. Product hunt and things like that would be wise to actually have a 15-second dissertation of why this particular startup or technology is so good. I want to thank the panelists. I'll just do some housekeeping here for kind of announcements in terms of what's going on. We're going to have nominations start on Monday, June 29th. We're going to allow 5 or 6 weeks of people to nominate their future-proofing stuff. My hope is, based on bringing you in today, Jean-Marc and John, that you'll become judges on the other end of the sausage grinder that we call the Future-Proofing Awards, and award in 16 different categories. People that are great. Hopefully you can join us for our next webcast, July 14th. We're talking about the future of work and how culture and leadership get shaped and changes in the future. We got this great newsletter that we send out to thousands of people. We think it's smart. I'm sure this webcast will feature prominently on one future send out. So join if you feel so obliged. We've also built this thing called the Gray Swan Guild. It's a global group of 200 sense makers, and we've produced our first document together. And we really came about as a consequence of the pandemic and just trying to make sense of this world that was being disrupted around us. Myself and Andrew are producing a book next month. We hope you'll like it. We'll probably be shamelessly self-promoting at some point in the future, and we thought we'd tease out right now. And that is all. So once again, I want to thank Jean-Marc, John, Andrea for being such great guests, surfacing such wonderful discoveries. I got a ton of homework after me. And coming to our sudden close, we will see you all in the future.
Great. Thank you.